this is the statement here is that all of these logarithms for certain observables don't even constitute the leading class. There are actually double logarithmic contributions which occur at quite high order in the perturbative expansion, and they're subleading in the number of colours. So they would be very difficult to spot under ordinary using ordinary methods. So it's a kind of an interesting story to get to this point, and it's hanging at the moment, this question.
Okay. So
this is the kind of generic. So you see, every time we have coloured particles in the initial or final state, and almost every observable that we're interested in, except for a certain minority of very inclusive observables, are very sensitive to, or are sensitive to additional radiation off the primary hard subprocess. So here I've written some generic hard subprocess for 2-to-2 scattering at some scale Q. And we generally do need to know how QCD dresses that kind of process. Makes these guys into jets, for example. And all experimental analyses require some knowledge of that kind of radiation, the additional
radiation.
That question might, within perturbation theory, might a priori not even be an interesting question, because hadronization effects, and we can't treat those within QCD perturbation theory. So we would hope that in order that we could use this perturbative framework to calculate how radiation dresses a given hard subprocess, we would hope that the hadronization process is sufficiently soft that it doesn't spoil everything, so that there is a correlation between, for example, where the energy goes in the particle level and where the energy goes at the hadron level, and that's indeed the case. So the hadronization process is largely a gentle process, and we can make a great deal of progress by calculating within QCD perturbation theory, almost in all cases with an appropriate resummation, so an all orders calculation. So this is a resume, but I don't know how much people are familiar with QCD and these particular issues. So so forgive me if I'm repeating things which people are already familiar with. The most important emissions which dress any given hard process are emissions which are collinear, so either quarks or gluons, which are emitted collinear, or emissions which are soft, so that's to say that the energy is going to zero. So, and in that case, it's only gluons that matter. Only gluons give leading contributions in the soft regime. So we need to worry about collinear quarks or gluons, or soft gluons. And this statement here, that these guys generate important contributions, because in the kinematic regime where a gluon is becoming soft or an emission is becoming collinear, we typically, in observables, will get large logarithmic contributions will appear. I'll say a little bit more about how they emerge in a second. So start off with soft gluons. So this is a picture showing how we calculate the effect of soft gluons in the case of a real emission. So here's the hard subprocess, and here's a real emission, and here's the amplitude squared, and this is how I typically draw squared amplitudes. So with some cut down the middle here. And of course, there are corresponding virtual corrections where this guy comes across here, for example, would contribute at the same order in this observable. So the soft gluon emission is simple enough to account for, because the vertex here is greatly simplified in the limit where this gluon is a soft gluon. So I tend to use little wavy lines for soft gluons and solid lines for everything else. It's a slightly different notation. So vector particles emitted off any spin particle, the vertex, in the case where this particle passes through virtually undeflected and emits this very soft gluon, is just directly proportional to the four momentum of the guy that's doing the radiating. That simplification leads to this. In this case, it's straightforward that we've got this simple factorization of the n perton amplitude sorry, the n plus 1 power magnitude into an n power time, it's a cross section, multiplied by, as you can think here, the probability of emitting this additional gluon. And these are the two propagators from here and here, the two new propagators that we get. And here are the vertices contracted. But these antenna factors. And this is some colour factor associated with the legs I and J to which this soft gluon couples. And that's the problem in resumming to our orders these contributions.
So let's...
The virtual gluon corrections are analogous. So here it's the phase space of the real gluon we have to integrate over. In the case of virtual corrections, it's just the loop integral, but it has the same factorized structure. There is one other subtlety with the virtual emissions, which we'll come back to.
Okay, so that's how we add soft gluons to a hard scattering amplitude.
What often happens, there's this is a slightly parenthetic remark, but the effect of soft gluons can be taken into account in a Monte Carlo through making use of an angular order pattern shower. So let me explain what I mean by that. So this factor here, which you saw on the previous slide, can be written as a sum of two contributions, where the soft gluon is emitted at an angle theta IQ relative to the parton which it's doing the emitting. And the key thing is this presence of this theta function here, which says that we only ever have to consider contributions where the gluon is emitted at an angle smaller than the opening angle of the primary partons which emitted it. So these are the partons I and J, for which the soft gluon connects across in the amplitude squared, right? And they define an angle. We only have to worry about emissions inside that angle. And similarly, there's a contribution of the other guy. So that happens after doing this azimuthal averaging. So if you've got an observable which is actually weighting the azimuthal angles differently, then this is not appropriate. That's in the... what one then does is after we've emitted, we've got a system which has got one more parton in it than we had before, and then we can repeat the process again, and iteratively, angular ordering the successive emissions. That's how Herwig generates or takes correctly into account soft gluon effects, coherent soft gluon effects in its pattern showering. It also simultaneously takes into account collinear effects using the same formalism. But so the Herwig Monte Carlo builds up its final states through angular ordering, and so this is here to show you that angular ordering is kind of emerging out of the.
So you say Herwig, but is there any Monte Carlo which doesn't do this?
Well,
all of them do this, right?
I think only Herwig and Pythia.
Herwig and Pythia,
right? Do it. Pythia didn't used to, and the LEP data indicated that it was necessary. So in the first instance, Pythia's implementation of the angular order, and I don't think I'm not so familiar with how it's implemented. It wasn't implemented totally faithfully originally, but in Pythia 6 and later, maybe, I'm not sure. Okay, now the major problem in all of these calculations, if you're trying to iterate order by order, is the colour factor, because it just becomes increasingly complicated. It looked innocuous when I wrote down the expression for the cross section, but to keep track of that exactly to all orders in the resummation after you've emitted n soft gluons, you have to know the full colour structure of the n gluon amplitude, and then you have to connect in order to understand how you're going to emit soft gluons off that guy. That's immensely, that problem's not been solved. And what is done instead in all of the Monte Carlos is to work in the large MC approximation, where the colour structure becomes much simpler and one can keep track of it. So that's worth bearing in mind. Let me say a few words, although the talk's mainly about soft gluons, about collinear emissions. So in this particular case, the colour structure, this is a property of colour coherence, which I will actually talk a little bit about later on. The colour structure is somewhat easier because in all cases, So we're interested in the case where these guys become collinear, so the angle between them goes to zero. In that particular case, it's always the case that one can think of the pattern that being emitted off the colour charge of the system that's... this guy's always proportional to the square of the colour charge of this radiator. So it's the colour structure is much simpler. So this is this iterative Altrelli Parisi approach to the pattern bracket. And this approach can be folded... you can see that it looks similar in essence to the soft gluon method, so it's not surprising that both of them can simultaneously be accounted for, which is what happens in Herwig and Pithiv using angular ordered pattern sharers in the large NC approximation. So the approximations in the Monte Carlos are that they work in the large NC approximation for soft gluon emission. Not for collinear emission, for soft gluon emission, and they also azimuthally average in order that they can make use of this angular ordering. Okay, so now this is a fairly obvious statement. Not everything is affected by soft or collinear enhancements. For example, the E plus E minus total cross section can't possibly care about how we. About additional radiation, and that's manifest in this thing here, the Bloch-Nolzig theorem. So again, the solid lines are generic partons coming out of some hard scatter, and then the little wavy line is the soft gluon. And the Bloch-Nolzig theorem says this: for soft gluons, there's an exact cancellation. So this is the amplitude squared. Right. These are the same, the level of the amplitude squared. They've all got the same topology. These. So this is a real emission. They've not got so they cancel pairwise, these ones. There is this guy and this guy cancel, and these two guys cancel as well separately, equal zero. So the sum over all cuts. No, that's not right. What I just said, this is right. They are the same, right? So this is one diagram cut in four different ways, and the sum over all those cuts vanishes. And so that's the statement. So there are no soft enhancements in this particular case. That only happens if we're allowed to. So the virtual corrections we integrate over the full volume of the loop momentum. The real emissions, well, we have to integrate over all possible real emissions to get point-by-point cancellation with the virtual correction. So it's only under that circumstance that we'll get zero. So if we don't do that, and so we restrict the real emissions by saying that they can only occupy some corner of phase space, then the rest of the phase space is left uncancelled with the virtual corrections. So we get a logarithm from integrating over the volume of phase space from the virtual graphs that's left uncancelled by the real emissions. All observables must necessarily be sufficiently inclusive to guarantee that there is a region where the cancellation operates, because nobody can measure an infinitely soft gluon. But apart from that, it's the case in many observables that we're left with this miscancellation. So, for example, if real emissions are forbidden above some scale mu, then the virtual graphs will have an integral like this left in them, and we'll generate a logarithm in the scale of the hard scatter divided by this scale due to this miscancellation, which would be divergent if we could take mu to zero. That would be equivalent to turning off all real emissions, and then we would just see the divergence in the virtual graph. Okay, so that's the origin. I'm going to be interested in observables where this kind of miscancellation takes place. The most obvious observable is Higgs plus 2 jet production at the LHC, where you make where like I said, the jets are going like this, the Higgs is produced, and then one makes a statement that there should be no additional jets between the two tag jets and the Higgs. So that's so typically we'll say no other jets with transverse momentum bigger than 20 GeV. And so that's precisely a situation where we're going to have these logarithms starting to appear.
Okay, so
this is just the point that I want to make here is that the final state collinear divergences, providing we sum inclusively over the collinear region of the final state, we get a cancellation similarly of the collinear divergences. The initial state, coloured initial particles, the initial state collinear radiation isn't cancelled, as we know, and that's the stuff that we factorise into the incoming hadronic distribution functions. So the bottom line, the way we're going to go about, we would compute. This is not the way it's done in the Monte Carlo, so they do it by this angular odd pattern shower. But the way I've been introducing the way to do these calculations, and I've not told you that all the soft emissions can be factorised from all the collinear emissions. So this is if I have a perton which radiates collinear particles, then I've got a jet of collinear partons. Any emission of soft gluons off those collinear guys is as if it would be emitted before I could rearrange the calculation. So it only cares about the overall colour charge of the jet of collinear particles. So summing inclusively over all the partons that the soft gluon could be attached to is equivalent to reattaching the soft gluon to before the collinear phase. So one can essentially calculate the Hadd-Skatter, address it with all soft gluon effects, which are always virtual, because all real emissions cancel with the corresponding virtual corrections. And then there's a phase of collinear evolution. The initial state collinear evolution gets factored into the pattern distribution functions and providing some inclusively over the final state, and then we get a finite and well-defined observable. So that's the way we do a calculation which includes soft and collinear gluon effects in the generic Hadd scattering process. So that all seems
perfectly
fine. What I'm going to do, just to kind of look ahead and hopefully whet your appetite, is argue that this factorization breaks down for certain observables, and that it does correspond to a breakdown of collinear factorization, which is you see why I wanted to put a question mark on the title. So let's
get to that point. So this is an example to show how these large logarithms arise.
A specific concrete example in E plus E minus. So this is the two outgoing quark jets in E plus E minus, and the distribution that I'm going to talk about for the next minute or two is the so-called thrust distribution. So what one does is one computes this quantity T, the thrust, which is defined by summing over all the particles in the event and maximising their projection on some axis n. So you vary this axis until you find the maximum of this numerator, or this quantity. So clearly, if there is no radiation and the jets are back-to-back, then the axis n is defined by the jet axis and the thrust is 1. Any additional particles tell us how much the system is deviating, this QQ bar that's produced in E plus E minus annihilation, how much it's deviating from back-to-backness. So if we were interested in computing, because we want to understand soft gluons, so this is the reason why people would be interested in this, and I've calculated this. If we're interested in actually calculating the fraction of the contribution, the fraction of all events which have got thrust bigger than 1 minus tau, so that's close to 1. So we want to know what's the fraction of all events which have a back-to-back within a certain within a certain amount defined by this quantity tau. Clearly, you're restricting real emissions now, because real emissions which are had at 90 degrees are going to cause a recoil and cause these to not be back-to-back, and consequently the thrust is going to be somewhat less than 1. So as tau goes to 0, in the limit of tau goes to 0, all real emissions are forbidden, except the ones that are absolutely collinear with the thrust axis. Okay. So we should expect that in this quantity here, we're going to get miscancelled logarithms.
The reason I want to just pick it out is to show you a tangible example of where
how these guys emerge. This is the classic example. We're going to get a Surdakov suppression factor. This is what this is. So this is the kinematic regime which corresponds to emissions, soft gluon emissions, which do produce a thrust bigger than 1 minus tau. You can see crudely that if this is for small enough angles, it's going like the angle that this quantity is going like tan theta over 2, where theta is the angle of the emission relative to this axis. So for emissions with sufficiently large KT,
what the definition of y is?
If we're talking about just massless particles, then so why is the rapidity? It's the which is the pseudo rapidity in the case where all particles are massless, and that's just equal to minus the logarithm of the tangent of theta divided by 2. Right. So the jet axis defines plus infinity in y this way, minus infinity in y this way, and 0 at 90 degrees. So it's just the boost invariant definition of so that if we boost longitudinally, then it's we just correspond to additive shifts. The rapidity differences don't change. So you can see here that for large angle emissions or emissions with a large enough transverse momentum, then this is satisfied, and emissions are forbidden. Okay,
it's just straightforward kinematics to get that. Now the effect.
So this is the integral over the virtual graphs. So here, so we have to take into account these virtual graphs. All real emissions are cancelled by the corresponding virtual graphs, except for these virtual graphs, right? Integrated over the region where the real emissions were forbidden, because they've got nothing to cancel against. Remember, the Bloch-Nodzig theorem says that everything cancels. Now I've turned off the real emissions, so I'm left with only virtual corrections, which I have to take into account. So these are the integration limits appropriate with that bound that I showed previously. We do the integral, right? And so we get a contribution to this fraction of the thrust, right? Which is not surprisingly of this structure, but it's got a double logarithm in it. So that's why I wanted to go through this example. It's got a double logarithm because this observable is sensitive to the veto in of collinear and soft emissions. So there are two. There's a logarithm whose origin is of collinear nature and a logarithm whose origin is soft, and they're both present in this observable. They're both being vetoed against. So that's the reason we have an alpha s log squared on the tau.
And then we can resum.
So what we do actually is consider this guy then to be the source of subsequent emissions and iterate. That method is appropriate to capture all of the leading logarithmic terms, or at least all the leading double logarithmic terms. So all terms in the series that go like alpha s log squared to some power are correctly accounted for by continuously considering the successive dressing of this two-pattern system by virtual correction. So this is the effect of resumming this. This is the first term in that summation. So this guy is what people call the Surdakov suppression factor, saying that we're forbidding radiation in this particular region.
Okay, now if we were going, if this were a different talk, we could go off and try to calculate, more interesting now to calculate the single logarithms. So sum to all orders the terms alpha s log, as well as alpha s log squared.
It's very important to do that. There's a computer program that's written for observables like thrust, and a whole set, essentially all observables which have got sensitivity and need to be soft gluon resummations. That can be done automatically now. Understanding the structure of these soft gluon emissions has been a recent series of papers by these guys.
Now, is that all in the RGNC limit for the color structures, or is the color structure exact?
It's exact, right? But it's only for a certain class of observables. The non-global observables, which I'm going to talk about, they can't calculate. Mm-hmm. But this computer program is very good in that it tells you if the observable is global or not.
Mm-hmm.
So it says straight up that I can't calculate the leading logarithms in this case.
Okay.
And it's the colour structure that's the problem.
Yeah.
Right, so let me summarise this part of the talk.
So what we see is that this is kind of a different way of saying what I've already been saying, that soft gluon effects are going to be important when we compute QCD corrections to an observable where we restrict the observable to be close to its Born level kinematics, to the lowest order kinematics. So, because if we say and the logarithm that we're going to get is a logarithm in the measure of how we've deviated from Born kinematics, from the lowest order kinematics. Right. So in thrust, the lowest order kinematics was this. Deviations from it were measured by this parameter tau, which told us that we could only emit radiation, right, which was roughly collinear or not too energetic. So certainly wide-angle Hird emissions that were forbidden. And we've seen that in those observables that real emission is concentrated to a corner of phase space, and it's that which generates these logarithms. So let me be generic. And so this is how this computer program works. It kind of works by defining some, identifying what the appropriate distance is from the lowest order kinematics. So in thrust, we've got the lowest order kinematics at thrust equal to 1 back-to-back jets, and then this quantity here, right? So the evaluated thrust tells us how we've deviated from Born level kinematics. We expect a logarithm in that quantity, not log squared. Other observables for which all of this technology applies are production of any particle near threshold. If we're near to threshold, then the deviation from lowest order kinematics is determined here now by the difference from the invariant mass over the threshold invariant mass. Drellian production at low PT, because if it's at low PT, if you've got a Drellian pair at low PT, then you're not allowed to radiate high PT emissions off the initial QQ bar, because if they had a large PT, you'd get a large recalling PT in the Drellian pair. So there are logarithms in PT squared which need to be resummed. Deep inelastic scattering at large X, so you take a parton out of a proton and look at it with a photon. If that parton has got nearly all the momentum fraction of the proton, then you can't radiate very much off it, right, kinematically, because you're close to the kinematic boundary. So that's again a case where only soft gluon effects are important. And the observable I'm about to talk about now, which is simpler to discuss than these guys here. And this guy here, the thrust, at least in E plus E minus, is not sufficiently interesting because it only had two coloured particles in it. And I want to look at cases where we've got more than two coloured particles. So this is the observable. This has been measured at the Tevatron by both experiments. And the basic measurement is two jets. It's originally actually proposed as a way by Al Mueller and Tang to probe BFKL physics. So the idea is to have two jets widely separated in rapidity and then not much in between them. So the original Mueller Tang idea was that there should be nothing in between, as far as one can tell in the detector. And then one's picking out two gluon exchange between the jets. So, but that's not what I'm interested in. That regime, there are associated logarithms in the... there are terms in the perturbative series which go like L for S times Y, the strong coupling times Y, 20 power. I'm not going to resum those. Those are the logarithms which Mueller and Tang were interested in. So that complicates things to try to simultaneously sum those and the effects I'm talking about. I'm interested in the fact that to define this observable, you've got to say there are no jets in this region with transverse momentum bigger than some value. And that's exactly how the Fermilab experiments defined it, and how the H1 and Zeus experiments defined the same measurement at Hera. Now, given what we know, there are logarithms in Q0 divided by the jet scale in Q. Right? They're going to be only soft logarithms, so we expect alpha S log, single logs, not alpha S log squared, because collinear emissions, we are going to sum inclusively over all collinear emissions. So the incoming partons are at the edge of this plot, and then the two final state jets are here, and we sum inclusively about both in both directions. So emissions collinear with the incoming partons we'll sum over, and emissions collinear with the outgoing partons we sum inclusively over. So it's only wide-angle soft emission that we need to worry about. So we expect that this observable should go like alpha S log Q over Q naught, and the contributions order by order in the perturbative expansion.
So that's what we expect.
So what I'm going to head towards is pointing out that the look to the contributions relative to the lowest order, which go like Alfred's the four log to the fifth, and that's the first order in which this weird thing happens. So let's stick with the conventional formalism for some time yet. So I'm going to do this calculation, or present this calculation, first of all, in a way which it is now known not to be complete, this calculation. So there isn't any argument. However, it may well be a very good approximation under certain circumstances. But when it was performed, it was thought to be the complete calculation summing up all logarithms of this type.
So the situation we have is we've got real emissions. That's the region of rapidity in the detector, right? So this defines the gap. So the minus y over 2 is one edge of the gap, plus y over 2 is the other edge of the gap. We've got a gap of size y in rapidity. And in that gap, we can't have emissions above q0. So we must integrate over all virtual emissions in that region. And they must be included. And that's what's going to generate our... Now this is the statement which is going to be wrong, right? But it seems as though it's a straightforward application of the Bloch-Nodzig theorem. So we only need to consider. So here's the 2-to-2 scattering process. For simplicity, although this has clearly been done for all combinations of quarks and gluons as the external legs, I'll just present the result for quarks as the external legs, because the colour structure is simpler. And we just have to figure out all ways of attaching the soft gluons to the hard scattering process. So here are four of diagrams. There are two more with the soft gluon bus from here to here, or from here to here, right? So those are the virtual soft emissions we have to integrate over this soft gluon, over this region of momentum. And that'll pick up. So all other emissions, the statement is, all real emissions, right, are either in the region complementary to this, in which case they cancel with the virtual emissions in that region, right, or they're in this region, in which case they're not allowed by the definition of the observable. So these are the only diagrams left after Bloch-Nodzig. Everything else cancels. And we compute these, think of what we've got as the amplitude for subsequent emission evolution, and so on, and iterate, always using the Bloch-Nodzig theorem to cancel any real emissions. Now that's wrong, that argument. So it took a while before anybody realised that there was a problem with it. The problem is, it's always true that the Bloch-Nodzig theorem works. So if we have a real emission, it's cancelled by the corresponding virtual emission. But a real emission that then has an evolution, it's not. Well, let's see how it works. The argument fails then.
So, okay.
So
let me tell you. I'll finish the story off before we see how this fails. Just to illustrate how one actually mechanically takes this into account. One can write generically the amplitude. So if it's quark-quark scattering, then we've only got essentially singlet or octet exchange in the T-channel. So we can project our amplitude onto that basis. So that's what these guys are, the singlet and the octet exchange in the T-channel contributions. So at lowest order, there's only an entry in this guy, because that's one gluon exchange. And there's a zero up here. Two gluon exchange contributing both, and so on. Okay, so we're going to calculate cross-sections by an appropriate squaring of that.
Can I ask a question, backing up just a little bit? The restriction on K-perp, is that to be imposed at parton level, single hadron level, or jet level?
So, well, in the observables, it's made at the level of the jets, right? So you'll define your jets in your experiment, and then you'll make the equivalent put on hadronic jets in this calculation. Now, at single logarithmic, so the accuracy at which I'm calculating then making a statement on the cut on the jet PT translates directly into the, in this calculation, into a lower cutoff on this KT integral here. That's how it works. At least in the KT algorithm, I think it's algorithm independent at the leading logarithmic level. So if I want to sum the leading logarithms in this ratio, it's in fact it has to be the case. It can't be anything else, because the logarithm in that ratio, any corrections to it is subleading. So whether it's from a theoretical point of view, a cut on the emission of a power tunnel with PT bigger than Q0, or a jet with PT bigger than Q0, they're the same thing. But the actual observable is defined to be no jets bigger than with PT bigger than this scale Q0. That's done using the KT algorithm at HERA and using the Korn algorithm in the measurements that have been performed at the Tevatron. But they're all the same at the level of theoretical calculation. Mm-hmm. Doing. Issues on the details of the jet algorithm would enter as one tried to be more sophisticated.
So, I mean, this is just to state that the log of alpha times KT is
the same as the
same
log,
as log
of
KT.
Providing that alpha
is finite correction, right?
That's right. That's right.
One wonders how big those finite corrections might be, but anyway, go ahead.
So the so these are calculated. This is called the one loop evolution, because we've calculated we calculate this matrix here, this evolution matrix. We obtain this by calculating the those six diagrams that I mentioned on the previous slide, right? So
it's easy enough to compute. We just have to compute these guys, and that will give us the order alpha s contribution to this matrix here.
Right. And this is the left undone is the integral of the transverse momentum of that virtual gluon. So this object here is calculated by calculating those six diagrams. Okay. Now, iterating that process in a fashion which allows us to always pick up the leading logarithms is generates this exponentiation. So we've got the primary hard scale at scale Q, then the first emission that we do should be a gluon whose transverse momentum is much smaller than Q. The next one should have a transverse momentum much smaller than the previous one. It's so that the hard scale is... This is the way in which we pick up, because the denominators from the propagators of these virtual gluons, right, are arbitrarily complicated, or are complicated, right? But if we strangle all of the transverse momenta, then we always have dkt squared over kt squared, or dkt over kt is the integral at this stage. We don't have to worry about the fact that this is the transverse momentum of a virtual gluon emitted after a number of previous emissions. So. You don't have to know about the history, in other words, in order to pick the leading logarithm out. And the way that we decouple ourselves from the history is by always immediately assigning the transverse momentum of the emission is small compared to what preceded it. So it's an iterative.
Am I remembering right that if you take the other ordering regions, those are always down by some log?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So this blob actually, this is why I drew this as a blob and it's not as just one gluon. So the lowest order is one gluon exchange. But after we've emitted this guy, then I can absorb the two gluons into the grey blob and then emit the next guy, and so on. Right? Assuming that this guy's transverse momentum is small compared to what went before it, which is the thing that simplifies the denominators and allows me to pick up the maximum number of the logarithms.
So if you're going to, tell me if I'm interpreting this correctly, so this is essentially the evolution of going from a color single exchange to an octet exchange or vice versa, right?
Yeah, you'll get mixing now.
Okay,
yeah.
So in doing so, at one loop you get the color singlet, right? At one loop you also get the two octets not forming a singlet, right? There's a higher representation there.
No, because there's the same external particles. These are only virtual corrections. So it's always the case that we've got four quarks sticking out of this process. So the amplitude is always either singlet or octet. What you're saying is... happens if we start to need real emissions, and suddenly things start to become, as we start to emit more and more real gluons, then the colour structure just explodes in your vents, which is the reason why it can't be done generally. Okay, so when these jets are far apart, which is typically the case in the observables, then this guy is particularly important. It's NC enhanced, and it's proportional to the size of the gap. So this is the guy which enters in the evolution. It's the guy that takes octet into an octet component into an octet component. And these the contributions are actually effectively constants. I'll come back to the IPIs. They're going to turn out to be the source of some problems.
So I see this gamma is not unitary, but there are things are disappearing.
Right, yeah.
But
it's got the Surikov factor in it, right? So
yeah.
It's saying
you're
paying a price for radiating.
Yeah.
Yeah. In QED, the IPIs are utterly irrelevant, right? Because in QED, this is a 1x1 matrix. And so the IPIs, it's a good place to mention it, these guys here, just are an overall phase. That's what's in QED is called a Coulomb phase. We'll see why it's called a Coulomb phase.
Soon. Okay, so now
that was the gaps between jets. I could have gone off and compared to the data, but the bottom line is that which has been done by Appleby and Seymour, and it works. The errors on the data are quite large, and it's not really you can also fit the data using a BFKL exchange. So at the moment, the data are not really telling us that much. Certainly there's no problem with the formalism, and certainly so let me go now to
pause for a moment. If I were to use the old BFKL, how would that differ from the expression that you get out of here?
Well, there would be BFKL assumes colour singlet exchange.
Yes.
And it never changes from colour singlet exchange, so there's no penalty
so
for not emitting.
So you don't get that N.
There's no Surikov suppression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, that's not true. You do get the NY. You must do because it's a leading logarithmic contribution in Y, which is in BFKL. So, in fact, that's the one bit out of that in that matrix which is in BFKL.
But I thought the N came from precisely the color octet part.
It is, but not when you. So it's true that the lowest order. So, the way in which that guy enters into the disaster.
Now you've got more than you ever needed.
So it's true that this guy's not in BFKL, but this guy is when this is singlet, right? And
yeah.
So after one evolution of this guy.
Yes, I see.
Right?
So maybe the coefficient is different or something, but
so no, there is a piece in BFKL actually, which this is related to the regiization of the gluon. So subsequent soft emissions actually in the BFKL formulas can lead to an exchange of two regiized gluons in the singlet channel. And if you didn't put the rungs in, then BFKL actually falls off. It does have a contribution in it, which is something like this, where this is actually divergent in BFKL. It's this integral over KT that we've been talking about, but the lower limit's zero because BFKL calculations tend to say no. They try to calculate elastic scattering processes, so with an NC as well. So it is in fact there is a, but it's the the piece of BFKL that's in is the bit that vanishes, so that you don't worry about this divergence because you pretend you're putting it, it'll go away when you put it into colourless external states. But it's not the leading part of the BFKL, but there is overlap. I wrote a paper with Mike Seymour on how to not double count and trying to do it. It's an unsolved problem to actually simultaneously sum all logarithms, all terms alpha s y and alpha s the log that I'm calculating here. simultaneously some of them both. That's not been done. Anyway, so let's come back to Higgs plus two jets. I kind of wanted to get to this. So this is, I did gaps between jets as an example of soft gluon emission. This is actually a bit of phenomenology. So this is supposed to be of real relevance to the LHC. So the observable is proton-proton goes to two jets separated widely in rapidity with the Higgs produced centrally. And I won't talk about how the Higgs is going to decay. In order to enrich contributions like this and the corresponding ones with double use, then one wants to suppress these. Now these diagrams, there's a colour connection, right, between these jets and these jets, and consequently, these processes tend to radiate more particles here than these, where there's no colour connection. So you would expect that you could enrich your sample of Higgs plus two jet events so that you've got the vector boson fusion contribution as opposed to the glue fusion through a top quark loop by cutting out radiation in between these jets and say no additional jets with KT bigger than Q0. So that's the standard vector boson fusion analysis makes that cut. And it's the logarithm of the jet PT to that Q0 that I'm interested in, so in summing up. And that follows exactly the same calculation as the calculation I just presented, because the Higgs doesn't have any colour. So the only place it differs is that the Higgs can carry momentum. So kinematically, it's not exactly the same. So the gap between jets has only two final state particles. Higgs plus two jets has got three final state particles. Kinematics is a wee bit different. It just means that this guy that was sitting in this matrix a couple of slides back gets its arguments changed so that we have particular dependence on the rapidities of the final state jets, which no longer need to be can have the Higgs to recoil against. But otherwise, this evolution is the same. So we can perform that evolution. So that's what this is. So this is something that I'm just about to complete now with the postdoc at Manchester. So the black curves, concentrate on the curved ones first, so these three curves here. So this is the QCD case, the glue goes to Higgs, for three different rapidity intervals between the jets. So 1 unit, 3 units, and 9 units. So the LHC is somewhere bigger than 3 and less than 9, typically. This plot's designed to illustrate how much suppression there is from imposing the veto. So as the veto scale increases, to reason these logarithms correctly, we're supposed to integrate over alpha s. So it's when I talk about the logarithms, I'm slightly over simplifying. We can do better than that. So this is essentially increasing veto in this direction. So as we increase the veto and say that we're being increasingly restrictive on the radiation, then not surprisingly, the QCD cross-section falls relative to the lowest order QCD contribution. So the lowest order QCD contribution is the diagram I just showed, glue fusing to Higgs. And then these guys are taking into account the soft corrections. And you can see that you get huge suppressions at large rapidities, which is what you would expect because these guys are colour connected. So this is qualitative, and then in the case of vector boson fusion, much less suppression. So it's these three curves here we're looking at the moment. Much less suppression. So this idea works. It's the same. And that by picking a veto large enough, then you get a very dominant. Your sample is predominantly electroweak. The interesting point to note is that at the LHC, this typical C value will be around about 0.2 or bigger. So around this region, right? And that's what you get if you've got a 100 GeV jet and a 20 GeV veto, which is certainly what is expected. And the solid curves are what you get with the fixed order, the order alpha s calculation of Higgs plus two jet production. So people have done that calculation, complete an entire Higgs plus two jet order alpha s correction. So it includes, for example, the vector boson fusion graph with one gluon exchange. So that's what these solid lines are here for the corresponding rapidity. And the resummation, you can see, is clearly important to resum these effects in the region. You might think it, that 100 GeV jets and a 20 GeV Vito, the logarithm of 5, isn't that big, and that maybe we didn't need to do the resummation. But the message is clear that it is necessary to do this resummation, especially given that you want to extract from this sample, you want to extract these guys and try to get access to the Higgs coupling. You want to measure the Higgs coupling to vector bosons. So the theory calculation ought to be it's entirely inadequate for C in the QCD case for C 0.2 and above
for any decent rapidity.
So do any of these calculations include the gluon exchange between the initial state and the final state?
These contributions.
Right, yeah, so you have those are all in
there. They're all in this evolution. You remember that I drew?
Yeah,
so
there
what
were four
we've got
diagrams.
Below
the
Higgs is here, and then I drew the diagram.
Just
so that's
double checking.
This isn't there as well.
Okay.
And the iteration of all combinations of those guys.
Okay.
So the bottom line at this point is that fixed order calculations can't adequately account for the effect of the Vito. It's a pressing question, really, to understand how much of the physics I've just been talking about is actually in the Monte Carlos. Certainly, only the leading NC piece, I think, is in the Monte Carlo. That's what might see more things. So that's just the bottom right entry in that evolution matrix. All the rest is not there. And that's the state of the art, in that even people who are doing, this has not been done yet for this, where you're trying to match the matrix element calculations to the pattern sharing anything other than the lowest order. The lowest. So what's been done so far is that the signal's been calculated at the lowest order, and then the patterns have been pattern shared using the Monte Carlos.
So that's
missing.
NC, I mean, there was this NCY term.
It's that term. There are some IPIs with which are leading into C as well.
That's what I'm. All right.
It's not clear. Not clear that they're in the Monte Carlo.
That was my question. Okay.
And a parenthetic remark: we didn't know how big this was going to be a priori, because once you've evolved the electroweak case, you mixed in an octet component, so that it's possible now to have interference between the QCD and the electroweak case, and it turns out that it's
negligible. Right, this is the fly in the ointment. So this is. Okay, let me get everything up.
This is the observation of Dasgupta and Salam. So this is the block node 6. So this is schematically the block node 6 case. So this is the amplitude squared again with the cut. Right? And the statement that the sum over all cuts, so I've only drawn two of the diagrams. The statement is that the sum over all cuts manages. Right? So real and virtual corrections of this type cancel. Now here's an example. So it's obvious when you see it, right? Consider, right, I've got a real emission, then I emit a second guy off it. So these two diagrams are the same. These are just different cuts through the same diagram. Now, if this guy, it's marked red, in that it's in the region where Vito is, it's in the region of having transverse momentum above the Vito scale, then that diagram's not allowed. But this one still is. So the blue blob indicates, because of the way that we resum the leading logarithms, we have to transverse all the successive emissions. So if this guy is going to be above the scale Q0, then so must this, right? But if it was a real emission above the scale Q0, it should be out of the gap region, right? So this is a gluon that's emitted. So let's just get it clear, right? So here's the gap, here's one jet, and here's the other jet. So this blue gluon here is emitted out here. So it's a jet that's been emitted somewhere here, right? And it's not allowed to radiate back in, right? So it's out here. It's got transverse momentum, which is bigger than the Vito scale. Its next emission must have transverse momentum smaller than it in order to be a leading logarithmic contribution. But that's all, right? And so here's an emission that's got transverse momentum smaller than it, but still above Q0 in the gap. This is not allowed, this is, right? guy is out of the gap region. So we have to worry about emissions outside of the gap that radiate back in again, which is not surprising. Right? Obviously, these observables are sensitive to emissions out the gap region because they are sensitive. It said that any emission that's outside the gap can radiate back into the gap. That physics was missing before. That's what this is saying here. But that is now a disaster for the theoretical calculation, because if it's one emission outside the gap, two is important, three, four, all numbers of emissions outside of the gap are now relevant, and the colour structure just becomes absolutely uncontrolled there. So Salam and Dasgupta considered this in the case of only two coloured particles, E plus E minus. And there they showed how to resum the logarithms how to get all the leading logarithms that were accompanied by a factor of NC, so that they could calculate only in the leading logarithmic, in the leading NC approximation, these corrections. Surprisingly, actually, this is a parenthetic remark again, the equation that they got to resum these are called they're leading logs in the same sense that the calculations, the alpha is log terms. The equation that they wrote down to resum them can be written precisely in the same form as the so-called Belitsky-Kovtubov equation, which is the incorporates nonlinear corrections to the BFGL equation. It's apparently got nothing to do with this. That was an observation that was noticed not long after they wrote down their original equation. So there seems to be some link between, and it's well known there that to try to compute all of the nonlinear corrections at small x is something which is an immensely difficult problem. So these two problems seem to be related to each other. Anyway, that was parenthetic. So these corrections need to be computed. So let's be clear. We need to calculate it's the subsequent evolution of emissions outside of the gap region, the subsequent virtual corrections to them, that we need to compute. So, like I said, that the leading N contributions have been performed in E plus E minus by Salam and Dasgupta, and in Hadron-Hadron by these people. So the gas-emitting jets observable has got this leading NC calculation of the non-global contributions. You can minimise the non-global contributions by making your jet radius big enough, because then you sweep everything that would emit back into the jet. So it by picking a large enough jet radius, is a way of minimising the size of these corrections. And they're not generally, for gaps between jets, bigger than about 10-15% for a cone radius of 1. So they're not enormous contributions, but...
Which is perhaps something of a relief phenomenologically. But they are important at the level of the
details, and certainly intellectually they're crucial. Okay, so what this is how we got started on this business. We wanted to compute the one gluon outside the gap exactly and not make any leading NC approximation. So that's what I'm going to talk about now. How long have I got left to talk? What time did I?
Well, we sort of want to hear the end unless it's really.
How much do you need?
How much do you need?
I'll definitely be done in 10 minutes.
That's fine.
Is that
fine.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to compute this one emission outside of the gap without any approximation. And we're going to do it using exactly the existing technology. So I'll show you, it's coming up.
So this is... So still doing quark-quark scattering, we now have to worry about the possibility that given a four-particle amplitude, that we can at some point emit a real emission off any of the legs, of course. So we need this matrix, which tells us how to emit a real emission. This blob here could have had an arbitrary number of virtual corrections in it. So at some point we just have to calculate this building block here. And then we have to be able to evolve that building block. So it's five-part evolution evolved through all its virtual corrections. So that's this guy here. So those two objects were computed by Curialis and Seymour last year. And this is just to show that they've been computed. And in fact, that they include objects which are quite familiar, in fact.
So this is how to emit and it's this eigonal factor for the soft gluons. So it's just it's a boring calculation. You've got to attach the soft gluon all places on the diagram. So to calculate D, you it's just a matter of computing these diagrams. That's all that's in D. Lambda's more complicated because to calculate lambda, for every you've got to compute this leap. So to compute lambda, you've got to compute all the diagrams, all the ways of attaching this guy. So that's what's in this object here. So this is the equivalent of gamma in the 2-to-2 case. So just to orientate, this is a simple expression, in fact. So this is this is the contribution now to the gaps between jets cross section, right? When we've got one gluon outside of the gap, right? And it's the contribution from when that emission is real. So let's read it from right to left. The Born term is evolved. So this is 2-to-2 evolved using the virtual corrections for the 2-to-2 scattering. Then it then emits somewhere along that chain, and then evolve that guy, and then this top line is the square of it, right? So that, and then integrate over the momenta of the out of gap gluon. So I've left that integral to the end. Okay, so I've got it's out of the gap. So that means it's in this rapidity region here or here, right? And its transverse momentum is above the Vitor scale. Because it's that region, which means that the subsequent virtual corrections miscancel, and that there's a corresponding contribution from virtual corrections.
So where we
start with the Born term, evolve it by 2-to using gamma, then emit a virtual gluon outside the gap. So I didn't say anything about where this gluon should be, whether its rapidity should be in or out the gap. So it still the argument still worked if it was a virtual gluon as well. So that is very similar to this guy here. Right, it just corresponds to integrating the rapidity of the gluon here over the out of gap region rather than the in gap region. So that factor of y gets changed to the volume of the out of gap region, which is potentially divergent.
That's a little bit confused here. I mean, the virtual gluon, your calculation, you want to get one real gluon outside the gap, right?
No, it can be a virtual emission outside the gap. So the argument that I made, so when I said that I have an emission that's outside the gap, then emits into the gap, it could have done this. The out of gap guy could have been on this side of the court.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be the subsequent real emission off of virtual.
Both will contribute to your
Yeah, so this is the contribution in the case that the out of gap gluon is virtual rather than real.
Now let me have a little aside on these Coulomb gluons, because they're going to cause the problems. They're known to cause all kinds of problems, these things. These are things that would give a phase in pure QED. So what are they? Point by point in the region of rapidity and transverse momentum, the real and virtual emissions cancel, right? That's what I've been saying. But it's only true for the real parts of the virtual corrections. Must be, because the real emission only contributes real contribution. The imaginary parts of the virtual corrections don't cancel against anything. So they're lurking, potentially even spoiling the whole of Bloch Nordsee and the whole of... But what happens to these guys is... I might worry that the subsequent,
so it's always the case that I never have to worry about that this theorem works when the soft gluon is the closest gluon to the cut, because when I sum over these two diagrams, the IPIs cancel then. But subsequent evolution of these guys might spoil the cancellation, which I've been talking about. It doesn't, in that these IPIs generate, in that case, a pure phase, which cancels. One can show that they only generate a phase, which cancels out when we square the amplitude. But the point that I'm making here is that actually, the way the cancellation the imaginary parts of the virtual corrections works is more complicated than I've been making out so far. And that's these guys here, these iPads. They're called Coulomb gluons. They're the guys that, in pure QED, if I have a Coulomb scattering, right? So if I consider a charge which or two electrons which scatter off each other, then there is a pure phase contribution to the amplitude from exchanging soft photons between the initial and final state, which never change, which always keep the external electron on shell. So the external electrons are always on shell. So in that sense, it's kind of classical scattering with exchange of gluons, which have got the right momentum in order that this guy should stay on shell and then subsequent emissions as well. Right. So those gluons, those are the guys that give the IPIs, of course, because if we cut through here, you can see there's a non-zero imaginary part, right? But only occurring when these quarks or electrons go on shell. What we're doing is we're picking up the pole in the fermion propagator, rather than the pole in the photon propagator. Right? And that is the pole in the photon propagator gives everything except the IPIs, and the IPIs are generated from when these guys go on shell. In QED, that just generates a pure phase, and can be calculated classically at phase. Now, this is what we expect to happen. Right? We've computed this out-of-gap gluon. We expect that when this out-of-gap gluon becomes collinear with either one of the incoming legs or one of the outgoing legs, that we should have a cancellation between the real and virtual corrections. What we've got potentially at the moment is an integral over the volume of the out-of-gap region in the evolution. And that's actually infinite in the approximation I'm making. That's what doesn't actually end. It's limited by the mass of the external incoming particles. So I've potentially got a divergent contribution. And it's occurring in the region where the out-of-gap gluon becomes collinear with the incoming or outgoing particles. Those are the two regions where I potentially have to worry. Those are the regions where I expect that I should get this a complete cancellation, and that works if the out-of-gap gluon is collinear with one of the outgoing particles. So it's quite a big calculation, and then for everything to collapse in the end is very reassuring. So it's indicative that we didn't screw up badly in computing these various objects. So what I've done is I've just stripped off the Born amplitude. So it's Born amplitude with this is at a fixed order. It's like what I've done, I've kind of looked at the integrand that I showed you previously, stripped off the boring stuff on the outside, which is just a Born amplitude, and then order by order checked to see that it vanishes in the collinear limit. So these are the two cases where the out-of-gap gluon is virtual and on one side of the cut or the other side of the cut, and this is the case where the virtual, where the out-of-gap gluon is real, and indeed the cancellation works. But it doesn't work for initial state collinear emission. It actually fails at fourth order, and it's the contribution fails is directly proportional to pi squared. It's this. So let me show you where the problem occurs. So this is the solid lines of the Born, the lowest order one gluon exchange. So and I put a dot on the guy that's for simplicity. I've just shown the out-of-gap gluon to be virtual, but it can be real. So in the case that we've got one emission, and that's the out-of-gap gluon, then I never get an IPI to worry about. In this particular case, I've only ever got one IPI, and since the observable's real, it cancels. In this particular case, I do get two IPIs, but they cancel when I sum over all cuts. The sign flips. So the first time it appears is the order alpha s squared, alpha s cubed, the order alpha s of the four contribution to the Born term. It's the first time where these two IPIs build up and lead to the piece that does not cancel. Now, hopefully what I'm about to show you will illustrate why I expected it to cancel. The cancellation is the plus prescription in the Alter Ali Parisi evolution. So I'm going to, right, and so it's the failure of the plus prescription, which I'm which these guys seem to be
describing. So what we've got after the non-cancellation is that I've got the Bohm term, I've got a contribution at order alpha s to the 4,
which has got an integral over the volume of the outer gap gluon, which looks like it's going to be
infinite.
Now, what's actually happening is something which is energetically not allowed. So as my outer gap gluon becomes collinear with one of the incoming legs, then I'm worrying about a potential divergence here as the rapidity goes to infinity, which means it's gone collinear with the incoming leg. But that can't happen if the transverse momentum of this guy is above Q0, which it needs to be. Right. What's happening is the approximation I use to calculate this is inappropriate. So I'm calculating it in the soft approximation. I should be calculating it in the collinear approximation, not making any assumptions about the guy being soft. So I can do that. So this is what I've written down before, the integral over the outer gap gluon in the soft approximation. Everything was in the soft approximation using the Iconal approximation, right, the vertex is P nu. We replace this by calculating only up to some rapidity in the soft approximation and then calculating above that rapidity in the collinear approximation. So no approximations now on the property of that vertex which emits the outer gap gluon. So this is going to be going to give you an Alter Ali Parisi splitting function. The PQQ is going to appear in here because I've calculated the emission of the out of gap gluon. Right. In the collinear approximation.
So let's see what happens. Okay.
So for this piece, which I'm going to recalculate, right, so the calculation of this is this. Right. Looks like it's got a divergence in it. So I'm cutting this off. And then I'm focusing on the bit that I couldn't calculate reliably and calculating that in the collinear approximation. That I need to calculate as a sum of real and virtual corrections. So
the next bit shouldn't surprise you, and it should hopefully make sense if you're familiar with the Alter Ali Parisi equations.
So in the collinear approximation, this cross-section is a sum of two pieces, right? The contribution from the real emissions and the contribution... this is just the real gap. Written in a particular way, which is going to make the plus prescription apparent. So it's this. So I must modify the incoming quark distribution function because I'm no longer so we've got incoming quarks, they radiate a gluon, and I must shift the argument to the pattern distribution function accordingly because I've radiated. I must replace essentially Q of x and mu squared by Q of x over z and mu squared. So that's a fairly trivial statement. This is PQQ. The splitting function. So this is 1 over 1 minus z in the approximation I previously computed. The upper limit on the z integral, right, is simply determined by the fact that I'm only going to use this in the region that y is bigger than y max in the collinear region. So this is calculated in the collinear approximation. Now, the corresponding contribution for virtual corrections should be, see this is finite, as z goes to 1, this cancels out. I don't have a problem, even in the limit of delta going to 0. This is the bit that's got a potential problem of a large logarithm in delta. This is the bit that should be cancelled exactly by the virtual correction. So that's the virtual correction. If AR equals AV, these cancel each other. We should do this a minus sign. Right? So there should be a minus sign relative. That's what happens. That is, and then I would just compute this. I would just put a plus on here, and then throw away the rest. But I've just shown you that AR doesn't equal AV at order alpha s to the fourth relative to the Bohm term, because of these pi squared terms. So what would happen if those cancelled? Is that all soft divergences, soft and collinear divergences, would cancel, and we'd just be left with collinear. At singular region, which then gets factorised into the incoming splitting function. So I can resum all logarithms of collinear origin and put them into the incoming pattern distribution functions. But this is the non-cancellation of this, and this is saying that I can't do that.
Right. And this is what we get.
So where previously I had to integrate over the out-of-gap gluon, and I didn't quite know what to do when it was calculating the soft approximation, I've just shown you that I can calculate it in the collinear approximation. So the part of this integral which is not collinear, I leave the same, and this is the bit that we just calculated. This is the mismatch. And it's this that generates, not surprisingly, right? So I'm sensitive now to emissions that were initially collinear to the incoming parton, and have then emitted at wide angle back into the gap. That's right. So I'm actually sensitive to the double logarithmic effect of collinear and soft emissions. And that's what this is. That's what's happened here. So this is
at this order. The first time I get this guy,
I get an order alpha s l squared log squared term. And so it means that the expression that I previously wrote down, where I'd left the integral over the rapidity of the out-of-gap gluon undone, that the correct thing to do with it is to recognise that it's generating an extra logarithm.
So we can't. This is of limited interest. It
shows that the actual size of the correction is potentially not tiny. Now, even though it appears at order alpha s to the fourth, you might hope that it might be at the tail end of the. It might not be so important. And in the rapidity region, in the this is the rate, the log of the ratio of the scales, q divided by q zero, and these are two estimates of the effect of that extra contribution. It's all subject to the big caveat that we've only computed for one emission outside of the gap. There should be two emissions outside the gap, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Now you might worry.
So what's the difference? I'm sorry, the difference between the all and SL.
The SL is strictly just the order alpha s to the 4 log to the fifth term and nothing else.
I see.
Whereas this is everything that we know, essentially. So this is kind of better to focus on this region, do the plot out in this region. These are constant. So this is this intriguing link to BFKL physics again. This is the one gluon outside the gap contribution divided by the Born cross section after resummation. So this is not the Born. This is the no gluons outside the gap resummed to all orders squared, right? And which actually is directly proportional to the contribution we just calculated at fixed L. That's really weird, right? Because there are no superleading logs in here, but it is what happens. So, and this goes together with the statement that the evolution equation for the non-global logs is actually looks the same as the. The reason we were inspired to plot this actually is because of the non-linear corrections in the BFKL equation are proportional to the square of the linear piece. So we plotted this
What is the vertical axis there?
This is the ratio of the one gluon outside the gap cross-section divided by the no gluons outside the gap cross-section squared. So it's saying that they're proportional to each other at fixed Q over Q naught at large Y.
Do I expect it to be so big, minus 20? Am I reading that axis right?
So it's a ridiculously large value of Y. Right? This is a theoretical object. I mean, it's that you can't have a negative cross section.
So I put that in just to show that there is this. I don't know what's going on with that. But let me finish off. Okay, so we need to add the contribution from more than one emission outside the gap, but there is an argument which I won't go through, but which says that the term we just computed can't possibly be cancelled by a contribution from more than one emission outside the gap. So it's not the case that there's some clever cancellation working in that way. So if we're wrong, then it's in a more interesting way than that.
Needless to say, that this contribution is formally one logarithm higher than anything else. Means that all the to get the leading logs correct actually requires a next to leading calculation of the 2-to-2 evolution, which has actually recently been done by these guys just a few months ago. So.
Now,
this is true that we. It means that this statement is wrong, that a parton that travels along radiates collinear particles to it, right, that subsequently emits a soft emission, says that this is not equal to collinear emission where this gap is emitted before the collinear emissions. So that's not true, then that is strikes quite deep into calculations of perturbative QCD. Having said that, though, these Coulomb-Bayes contributions, these IPIs, were known to be caused real problems in proving factorization in QCD. And to get rid of there were uncancelled divergent pieces in the original proof of factorization of this which had their origin in these IPIs. And they were cancelled by including the remnant. You had to include soft gluon emissions, it was insufficient to compute soft gluon corrections to some higher process. You had to remember that this guy came from a hadron, and then include also soft gluon corrections into the hadronic remnant. So Coulomb gluon contributions of this type were important in cancelling these I pi squared terms, which appeared in that case and brought factorization. So the key difference between what we've done and this is that in this case, the contribution was for the region, the bits that were potentially breaking factorization were the transverse momentum region, right, going to zero. In our case, we're talking about soft gluons whose transverse momentum is hard above Q0. So this is a possible, this is why loophole in what I've been talking about. But this difference led us originally to think that, if this has got a large transverse momentum and it's been hooked into the remnant, then it'll be power suppressed, this contribution. It'll be suppressed by n squared over q squared, over q zero squared, in a way that it wasn't here. So it should be higher, it should contribute, it should have nothing to say about these. However, I wouldn't, that's not been proven, and these Coulomb gluons are weird, so it's not impossible that this is irrelevant for this argument, in which case these IPIs could be cancelled out. But whatever's happened, the resolution to this issue should be interesting.
Well, at least I find it interesting.
The possible implications for other observables is it would need also to be looked at, because observables which are actually free of non-global logarithms of the Desgupta-Salam type could be contaminated by this, in that there are a certain class of observables like the thrust in E plus E minus which don't have non-global corrections to them, but because the non-global corrections are subleading. But if there are superleading contributions, then the non-global corrections are elevated to leading. So it could contaminate more than just the traditionally non-global observables which people have computed. So this really is the last slide. So these are the questions, I guess, or the main points which I would emphasise. The question of whether or not these superleading logarithms actually are there, and if they are, then what are the implications, is still unanswered. Although I think it's a very interesting problem in perturbative QCD. That aside, that I've shown you that soft gluon resummation is needed for Higgs plus 2 jet production, and that I also pointed out that this is a non-global observable, and the Desgupta-Salam type non-global logs, which are definitely present, have not yet been included in that observable. I didn't even show those. I did say that one might hope that they're not going to contribute too large a contribution, but nevertheless, one does want the calculation at the few percent level. The question of including next to leading order corrections using the Dixon and Sturman two loop evolution matrix is also, it could be included into this formalism. we need to try to actually establish to what extent it's okay to take the existing Monte Carlos and to do the resummations using their pattern sharing algorithms. And this is just to remind you of why this is also important in this particular case. What the goal is to actually ultimately extract the coupling of the Higgs particle to vector bosons, for which an understanding of all of this stuff is mandatory. Thank you.
So once again, coming back to the final point that you were making here, you're saying that in the normal calculation, the form factor from the or just the attachments to the whole color singlet structure of the incoming proton or whatever leads to a cancellation of these I-pi's in a satisfactory way. So is it the color singlet structure that is responsible for that, or the proton, or?
I don't know. Yeah, you would. That must be playing some significant role, I guess. It can't be anything else about the proton, because it could. It's the one statement that we can make which is independent of the structure of the proton.
Right.
So if these I-pi's are going to cancel, then the one thing that we did do wrong, if you like, is we took out a coloured amplitude.
Now Stan, of course, is fond of noting that for some spin correlations and things like that, all these Coulomb cancellations fail. Okay, that you don't get factorization when you start looking at something like a spin correlation or something of that sort, despite the including the correct color structure. So I don't know if there's any relation or not.
No, that's I'm going to Slack on Friday.
I said, well, you'll certainly end up talking to him about this then.
Yeah. The idea was to talk to Lance Dixon, but
I
forgot.
So, can you relate what you're doing to soft collinear effective theory? So these guys are doing a lot of the same things you started out talking about. They're getting thrust distributions correct, and they now have four jet observables. I just heard a talk last week about it. So if I understand this correctly, this I-pi, so they explicitly separate the soft and collinear degrees of freedom, right? And this I-pi would just be a mixing. Would that be something that would just show up in a normal way if I did a SCED calculation? Or was this...
It's a good question. I don't know. We have talked about how this translates into that language. I don't know.
Okay.
It might be a nice way to get a different handle on it.
Mm-hmm.
We want to compute the coupling into the remnant by putting a realistic, having a photon with actually all scalar particles, but that's the first thing that we want to check. The other thing which wasn't proven in all of this was we still transverse momentum ordered as we went down there, and that works. But we did assume that. So it may well be that that's the wrong ordering variable, and that in actual fact that that these guys don't show up if you would use a different ordering.
Yeah.
So it's existed. Yeah.
A priori, you would think that another ordering would lose you a log, and then you might get the log back or something. You would never get the super log.
Well, yeah.
But your super log can make it possible that there are other regions.
I think the answer does depend upon the ordering variable, which makes me really nervous. It's evident. It doesn't when it's only the 2-2 evolution. It doesn't depend on the ordering. You can use KT ordering, energy ordering, or angular ordering, and it gives exactly the same answer in all three cases. So. But it does change the answer in this case. So. But it doesn't make it go away.
Yeah.
So it's yeah.
Thank you.